Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 14, King Pururava, enchanted by Urvasi, text number 46. Tasya Nirmantaya Narjato Jataveda Vibhavasu Traya Savideya Ragya Putra Tve Kapitas Trivit. Tasya of Pururava Nirmantanat, because of interaction, Jata was born, Jata Veda, meant for material enjoyment according to the Vedic principles, Vibhavasu, a fire, Trayaya, following the Vedic principles, Saha, the fire, Vidyaya, by such a process, Ragya, by the king, Putra Tve, a son's being born, Kalpitaha, it so became. Trivrit, the three letters, I-A-U-M, combined together as Om. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. From Pururava's rubbing of the Aranis came a fire. By such a fire, one can achieve all success and material enjoyment and be purified in seminal birth, initiation, and in the performance of sacrifice, which were invoked with combined letters Om. Thus the fire was considered the son of King Pururava. Purport. According to the Vedic process, one can get a son through semen, Shukra, and one can get a bona fide disciple through initiation, Savitra. Or one can get a son or disciple through the fire of sacrifice, Yajna. Thus, when Maharaj Pururava generated the fire by rubbing the Aranis, the fire became his son, either by semen, by initiation, or by Yajna, one may get a son. The Vedic mantra Omkara or Pranava, consisting of the letters A-U-M, can call each of these three methods into existence. Therefore, the words Nirman Tanaj Jata indicate that by the rubbing of the Aranis, a son was born. Well, that's certainly an easier process of getting a son. Probably easier to take care of your son, too. But I don't think we're so good. First of all, you got to find a Rani. They had to learn how to perform the Vedic sacrifice. So text 47, by means of that fire, Pururava, who desired to go to the planet where Urvasi resided, performed a sacrifice by which he satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the enjoyer of the results of sacrifice. Thus he worshipped the Lord, who is beyond the perception of the senses, and is the reservoir of all the demigods. Purport, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram yaga tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram, any loka or planet to which one wants to go is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the enjoyer of the performance of sacrifice. The purpose of yajna is to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this age, we have explained many times the yajna of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra is the only sacrifice that can satisfy the Supreme Lord. When the Lord is satisfied, one can fulfill any desire, material or spiritual. Bhagavad Gita 3:14 also states, Yagya Bhavati Parjanya. By offering sacrifices to Lord Vishnu, one can have sufficient rainfall. When there is sufficient rainfall, the earth becomes fit to produce everything. Sarva Kama Dukha Madhi. If one can utilize the land properly, one can get all the necessities of life from the land, including food grains, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. Everything one gets for material wealth is produced from the earth, and therefore it is said, Sarva Karma Dukha Mahi, the Bhagavatam 1:10:4. Everything is possible by performing yajna. Therefore, though Purava desired something material, he factually performed yajna to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord is adokshaja, beyond the perception of Purava and everyone else. Consequently, some kind of yajna must be performed to fulfill the desires of the living entity. Yajnas can be performed in human society only when society is divided by Vanashram Dharma into four varnas and four ashrams. Without such a regular process, no one can perform yajnas, and without the performance of yajnas, no material plans can make human society happy at any time. Everyone should therefore be induced to perform yajnas. In this age of Kali, the yajna recommended is Sankirtan, the individual or collective chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This will bring the fulfillment of all necessities for human society. Many topics are discussed in this particular purport. One of them is that all our desires are fulfilled by Krishna. And that's all the soul can do is desire. Now what we desire depends upon our faith. That's the first one point. The other point is that everything comes from the earth. Third point is that without Vanashram Dharma, there cannot be any performance of yajna, even the Sankirtan yajna. So the first point is essential, as it says, anadidvam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam shriras stopikondiya nakaroti nanalipite, that those can actually see with the eyes of knowledge, can see that the soul is eternal. We're all eternal. Isn't that good news? We're all going to live forever and ever and ever. Transcendental. We're even transcendental to this material world. We have nothing. We're not really involved in the material world except through our consciousness, our perception. And beyond the modes of material nature, that no matter what mode of material nature we're subjected to at the present time, we're actually beyond it. We have nothing to do with it. Despite contact with the material body or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. So we're the observer and the desire. So we're not entangled in the material world. We're always transcendental and aloof from it. But our consciousness is involved with matter. And therefore, because of our perception and our conceptions, therefore we suffer. In the same way that if you go to a movie and the hero is being tortured, you feel bad. Now, watching the movie doesn't mean we're being tortured. But because we're identifying ourselves with the hero, therefore we have to experience some distress. Similarly, because we identify ourselves with these gross and subtle bodies, therefore we feel distress. Or so-called happiness in the absence of distress. Now, as long as one has a conception of identifying oneself with the gross or the subtle body, then one will desire accordingly. If my body is feeling some distress, or if there's some possibility of obtaining some happiness through some means, then of course I'll desire like that. Now, if Krishna is not included in that desire, then it's called material. And if Krishna is included in that desire properly, then it's called spiritual desire. So our choice is whether we want to have desire materially or spiritually. If we desire materially, then we get a material result. Sometimes the result is considered to be sat or asat, generally speaking. Purusha prakriti stohi punte prakriti janguna karna guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmisu. Thus the living entity follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes. So that's what we're enjoying. Sometimes goodness, we're being dunked underneath the water, we're drowning in the ocean material distress. That's called ignorance. We're hoping to come out of the water and be saved. That's called passion. And when we're pulled out of the water temporarily and we feel some relief, we can breathe some fresh air and we feel happy because we're not drowning anymore, that's called goodness. So we're either drowning in material nature, struggling to get out of it, or getting some relief from it, and then being afterwards being put again into the ocean of material miseries, hoping against hope that I can get out. And when we're out, we hope against hope I'll never get back in to the ocean of material miseries. And because it's all because we're desiring. And what are we desiring? Basically speaking, everyone desires in this material world to be the lord of some part of it, to get the feeling that we're controlling something so that we can enjoy it. We want to become God, the enjoyer. That's called hankering. And we're lamenting the fact that we can't do it the way we want it. We want all mystic powers so I can lord it over the material nature forever. And we can't get them. And therefore we're always lamenting. Therefore, one has to become gradually convinced that the only thing that's desirable is Krishna. Of course, Krishna has this process by which we become aware, even materially speaking, that he fulfills our desires. Not only spiritually, but everything we have at the present moment has been given to us by Krishna. It's because Krishna has fulfilled our desire, and therefore that's why we have whatever we have. Therefore, akama moksha kama va, moksha kama udariti, divrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. Akama sarvakama va, moksha kama udariti, divrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha para. That one is either if one has no desire, akama sarva kama va, or has all kinds of desires, moksha kama, or one desires liberation, one should with full attention fix his mind upon Krishna to fulfill that desire. Like Dhruva Maharaj, he wanted a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather, Lord Brahma, which is quite an accomplishment. Lord Brahma, his kingdom is the entire universe. Now to get a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma, greater than the entire universe, is quite an ambition. But he was very ambitious, Dhruva Maharaj. And therefore he was willing to go through the necessary sacrifice in order to do that, focusing his mind upon Krishna, because to get something big, you have to, whatever we get, big or small, has to come from Krishna. But if you want something big, you have to make a big sacrifice. Therefore, he went through an austerity where he stopped eating, he stopped drinking, he stopped breathing, so that he didn't get disturbed by the momentary breathing. He could just completely fix his mind upon Krishna without any deviation, in full concentration. And indeed, he got a kingdom, the Polestar, which is bigger than the whole universe. Now, most of us are not inspired to get a big kingdom like the Polestar. Not inspired enough to stop eating and drinking and breathing. But we have so many other little desires that we want to fulfill. And therefore, even those desires, we should try to rely upon Krishna. Because when we rely upon Krishna, and Krishna fulfills the desire, because he doesn't always fulfill the desire. If we desire to kill our enemy, Krishna may think about it twice before he gives us, fulfills our desire. But when the desire is, especially when it's in relation to Krishna, then Krishna easily fulfills that desire. Like Kardama Muni, a great yogi, was meditating for 10,000 years. He saw Paramatma within his heart, and then he asked Paramatma for a good wife. Now, that's a lot of effort to get a good wife, but it's hard to get a good wife nowadays. But we don't have 10,000 years. If we try to meditate for 10,000 years in Paramatma, by the time, if we got a good wife after 10,000 years of such meditation, then we'd be at the end of the golden age, and we and our wife would have to run from these little pygmies trying to eat us, which would be rather unpleasant for a honeymoon. There's a big feast and we're on the menu. Still, we don't need a big desire. We just, if one is a brahmachari, he probably once wrote a letter, what we should desire is some place to sleep, which in this temple is, there's enough place to sleep. And we should desire something to eat. And so far we've gotten something to eat. In the Hare Krishna movement, no one has ever died that I know of from starvation. Most devotees die from eating too much. And some service. If that's there, then we should be satisfied. Of course, we have so many other desires that the temple may not be able to fulfill it. Just like Vrikasura, he wanted a benediction that whosoever head he touched would crack into thousands of pieces. So Narada Muni advised him to worship Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva could give such benedictions, but Lord Vishnu wouldn't, and Brahma would hesitate, because he's been chastised enough by Krishna, giving out benedictions to Hiranyakashipu, Banasura, and others. Therefore, Krishna may give us our desire to fulfill it, especially if it will help us progress in devotional service. But Krishna doesn't get fulfilled desires. That means that we constantly ask to another desire and another desire to be fulfilled. That we want one car, and then we want two cars, and we want four cars, and another one, another one. But Krishna will fulfill things that will actually satisfy our desire to have material desires, to have material some kind of material satisfaction, or what we actually need for our service. And the other point made here is about Varnashram. Now, we have an outline of Varnashram. That's why the ladies sit over here and the men sit over here, more or less. I mean, it's a diagonal here. But close enough. It's acceptable. Because we recognize that they're actually in the material world, although we're all material, spiritual beings, we're not part of this material world, still we all have material bodies. That we still, in the Hare Krishna movement, accept they're actually men and women, which may be a little radical nowadays. Soon they'll call us, this cult, they actually believe there is men and women. My God, how backward they are. We believe it. And it says that men are like butter and women are like fire. And in the presence of fire, generally the butter melts. So there's some separation. Not out of aversion, but out of intelligent behavior so that we keep our consciousness cool and we can concentrate on Krishna. Because that's how the material nature works. Now, also, we have vanashram because we're vegetarians. And we most of us still, I think, here, we take milk. So, vanashram means that you have to protect the cow to some extent. Even the meat eaters protect the cow to some extent. And ideally, we get our varnasha means that we get our necessities simply. Grain. We don't think, all of us, we don't think we need a car, we need a separate house, we need a separate, you know, everything separate because I'm the king and I need my empire. I need my kingdom. Or I'm a queen and I need my kingdom. So, because of that, we're acting as brahmacharinis or brahmacharis or householders, but we're not trying to accumulate excessive amounts of paraphernalia to establish our own kingdom somewhere. So in that way, we have some restrictions. Like brahmacharis have restrained from associating too closely with the ladies. Ladies are restricted from associating too closely with the men. In household life, there is some restraint that sex life is supposed to be for producing children to raise them in Krishna consciousness. It's not a hobby. As material world nowadays, people think sex is a hobby. After you work hard and after you play your video games, and then you take up, that's one of the hobbies. And there's some order to, there's some regulation. We get up at a certain time. We come to the program. There's services to do. There's actually some kind of discipline. As one, during the Vietnamese War, they came, the draft board, to induct some of the devotees into service. So the devotees were trying to become exempt from service. The draft board was examining the life of the devotees, and he found out that the lifestyle of the devotees is much more austere than that of the servicemen. So he exempted the devotees from service in the army. So it's austere, but the austerity is meant so that we can perform Hare Krishna, we can chant Hare Krishna, yajna for Krishna. The austerity in itself doesn't really help us very much. It may avoid, for some extent, the miseries of material existence, especially if one has no place else to go, and there's food here, and there's shelter, some place to sleep. One may accept it for some time, but unless there is Harinam Sankirtan, unless there's the chanting, and actually taking pleasure in the chanting, getting some elevation in consciousness, one will think it's just too austere here. Let me go out and follow my mind and senses as they dictate to me. Because that will make me feel happy. I'm free, I'm independent, I'm powerful. Whatever my mind tells me, I obey. Whatever my senses demand, I'm there to serve. So Prabhupada said that, generally speaking, varnashram in our institution means that if you're intelligent, you like to study books, then you can preach. You can tell other people about Krishna. But don't, on the basis of whatever knowledge we think we have, then claim that I'm now become supreme, that I know so much. Don't try to take Krishna's place. Understand that whatever we know comes from the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And if one has some ability to organize, then one should organize the temples or the Sankirtan movement, because it's all the Sankirtan movement. One should try to organize the Sankirtan movement. Even we should try to organize our lives, put our toothbrush where it belongs, etc. That's also good management. You don't have to manage the whole world, you just have to manage your toothbrush. And if one has some resources, then one should utilize them in Krishna's service. And if one has nothing, then one can assist everyone else. One can simply participate and chant Hare Krishna, and that will be, and assist others in spreading the Sankirtan movement and participating in it. And that will make one perfect to the extent that one will develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. One will actually like to be in Krishna's association. One will actually like to chant Hare Krishna. It won't be, oh, another day, another 16 rounds. What a burden. My poor mind has to go through the struggle again. Another class, beating on my false ego. my poor sensitive false ego, they keep on beating on it. What are they? Who do they think they are? Why are they torturing me? No, if we do that, we'll actually develop a desire to chant Hare Krishna. You hear about Krishna, it'll actually become pleasurable. And that means that we're actually developing love for Krishna, which is our perfection of life. So our activities help our consciousness, and our consciousness helps our activities, so that gradually we can make progress towards perfection. And although we may not know that we're working in Vanashram, but we actually are working in the, more or less the skeleton outline of Vanashram. And in the future, as the movement develops, then we'll have the devotees, they'll be absorbed in the sadhana, and then we'll also have clear Vanashram for people who don't really want to take up the process of pure devotional service, but will recognize the necessity for even eating of following sacrifice. They'll chant Hare Krishna, and at the same time they'll cultivate the land, and they'll get the means for Vedic sacrifice, etc., etc. Or at least for the chanting. They'll cultivate the land, they'll organize society so it's peaceful, there'll be rulers who will actually work dutifully to create a peaceful atmosphere, so the chanting of the holy name can go on unimpeded. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Going once. Going twice. Thank you very much. Grandharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.